This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with the Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tent Talk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, and it is beautiful. It's just, well, this is why we live in Florida, these wonderful, wonderful days. So, okay, I had a wonderful guest I had scheduled for today. Unfortunately, he is traveling and he's got caught up in some kind of a little mess there, and he wasn't able to make it. So I'm going to be talking a lot today. These things happen. Wanted to talk to him because he's a fascinating man, and we'll have him back. I'll try to reschedule him once he regroups himself and finds himself wherever he wants to find himself, because it will just be fun to talk to him. But anyway, it's going to be fun also to talk a little bit today about several subjects. One of them, it was nice that we had this lead-in a little while ago for Hollywood Connections with Don Reese. Now, it just turned out that over the years, I've developed many friendships with the authors who have appeared on the show, and one of them is Phil Vega. Phil, when he first came on the show, I was so impressed. Well, when I got his book, I remember when I got his book, I didn't know anything about him, and I got this book, and as happens to me all the time, I get so many. And so I don't judge a book by its cover, and I don't, I don't make snap judgments, but, I just pick up books and I start reading, and if they grab me, if there's something about them that just intrigues me, I just keep reading. And that's what happened when I picked up Last Exit to Montauk, and it was a book that somehow I immediately, within, I think, less than a page, I was in that book, and I thought, whoa, this is such a great book. And so Phil was on the program for that book, and then since then for two other books. And now I just got word from him a few days ago that he is a volunteer at Gasparilla, the film fest, because he is trying to find somebody to make a film out of his wonderful books. So it's really been thrilling to see the progress of what he's accomplished in the time since he first started coming on the program. So with that in mind, I want to just thank Don Reese so much for having him as a guest on her program, Hollywood Connections, which airs here in the afternoons now on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. Because this is one of the things that people don't understand. It is so very, very difficult to get traction in this world of publishing. You are putting your books out there. You have very limited time in which to promote them. And boy, that's it. It comes and it goes. And you have to keep going. You have to keep promoting them yourself if you want. Even authors who are published by mainstream, the big five publishers, will find that they have to continue promoting themselves, getting people to notice their books. Now, I'm very pleased that Phil has connected with Don Reese and that together they will be at the Gasparilla Film Festival this coming weekend. It's going to be very exciting, and you can buy tickets and go to see a lot of the movies and attend the various events. But look out for Phil and Don. They will be there roaming around. Phil is going to be a volunteer. But this is what I'm saying, that you have to push your books, or you have to have somebody push your books, somebody who will promote your books and who will keep always talking about them, because with the number of books that come and go, unless somebody keeps talking about your books, they're forgotten. That's why we have been doing what we call the book buzzes here with Rita Moreau and now with Devon Miller. We do these book buzzes to help authors keep their names out there. Of course, one of the ones that I'm so thrilled always to promote is Carol J. Perry. You will hear me mention her many times at the end of the program, because I truly believe that she should have a series on the Hallmark Channel. Her Witch City Mysteries are just fun books. They're enjoyable, good stories, great writing. As a matter of fact, she's been, for the last 4 weeks since the last book came out, she's been like in the top 10 on the Amazon in the category. You know, she's in she's a cozy mystery with a little bit of paranormal, but she's been really hitting a major stride here. And of course, she's often seen on her books, and sometimes multiple books are on the end caps at Barnes & Noble. So she's accomplished an amazing amount of, I mean, she's just, it's, when I think back that she was the first guest in the studio 6 years ago, and since then she's written 11 books, and now she's starting a new series. So it's really exciting for me to see the development it's the fun of knowing that she's found that joy on paper. She's sharing that joy on paper, and she's in the top 10 on the Amazon list for cozy mysteries. So, wow, you know, I'm so happy that we're able to help and we're able to keep her name out there. And for that reason, we have a book buzz that Rita Moreau did for her. And so let's play that book buzz. Okay, Ed? Because it's a good one.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. See Something, a Witch City Mystery Book 11 by fabulous Kensington author Carol J. Perry. Here's the buzz. Salem's WICH-TV program director Lee Barrett is about to discover no good deed goes unpunished. Lee has been promoted from field reporter to program director. Keeping track of all the shows and managing the local TV personalities, including a cowboy, a clown, and a performing dog, has her head spinning. Perhaps that's what makes her take pity on the distraught woman she finds sitting alone on a bench on the Salem Common. When she realizes that the poor woman doesn't even know her own name, Lee takes her into the warmth of her home she shares with her Aunt Ibby and their clairvoyant gentleman cat, Orion. Maybe Lee can use her own psychic gifts to divine the woman's identity. Lee's detective beau, Pete Mondello, wants to talk to the Jane Doe. But before he can investigate, he's called to a crime scene. A body has been found washed up in a narrow harbor cove. As harmless as her new house guest seems, Lee can't help but wonder if she may be harboring a killer. An entertaining story that keeps readers guessing until the very twisted and eerie end. Carol J. Perry was born in Salem, Massachusetts on Halloween Eve, and that magical city serves as the backdrop for her Witch City Mysteries. See Something, a Witch City Mystery Book 11 by fabulous Kensington author Carol J. Perry. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, thank you, Rita, for that one. Well, you know, this is part of the fun that we have here. We've just developed this lovely idea here of how to promote authors with the book buzzes and trying to make connections now with Hollywood connections, so that authors who have books that they know. I mean, so many times when you read a book, and this happens to me, of course, as a script writer, I will read a book and I will say, wow, I want to see that on the screen. I would love to be hired to take it to the screen, because I'm a very visual person. And if a book just gets into my head, I can see it so completely as a film that it stays with me forever. It's like I am with Phil Vega's books, particularly Last Exit to Montauk, because this one, just from page one right through it, it's very cinematic. It's ideal for a really lovely, touching, multicultural romance. And I'm hoping that he will find, you know, a producer out there, a director out there, perhaps at Gasparilla, and that's one of the reasons we have these wonderful film festivals, is the opportunity to get out there and meet people. So we have hopes for Phil, and we have hopes for many of the authors who have appeared on Joy on Paper. One of my favorite is Jill Block, and I'm hoping, really, that The Truth About Parallel Lines is another wonderful book that I think would make a terrific film. And really, they do need some new material. I know if you are like me, you are getting really, really tired of looking at all those little squares on the streaming video channels, and nothing interests you. I mean, I'm going through... there has to be some kind of a game now they have to make with doing these squares. It really drives you crazy. But that's why I'm hoping to help promote people who have wonderful books and get their name out there and help them meet the right people to get themselves a book deal. Because it's always sad for me when I have a book, for example, when there's a book that I just love or an author I love, and their books are forgotten and nobody ever reads them, or few people ever read them. Sometimes I feel like I'm the only person in the world who is reading Maud Diver, for example. I love Maud Diver. I will read all of her books over and over. I've read all of her books, and I've read them at least twice and sometimes three times. Nobody reads Maud Diver. She's long gone and forgotten. And that's so sad, because she's such a brilliant writer. So this is the whole point, I think, the wonderful sort of joy that I get from doing Joy on Paper, is that I get to keep reminding everybody of books that are that should be read. You know, even when I interview people and they, you know, they haven't had a book released recently, I don't really care. I mean, if I like their book and it was written 10 years ago, I will interview them. It doesn't matter to me, because if it's a great book, I want somebody out there to be reading it. So this is really, I think, in the end, that's really, I had no idea when I started Joy on Paper that would be the major thing that I would be doing, that I would be really helping to keep books alive. And so it's been really a lot of fun to do that. Now, one of the things, you know, as I mentioned, I have been so thrilled with, of course, Rita Moreau, and we call her One Take Rita here, because she is so good. She can just pop in the studio and she just rattles away, and she can do these book buzzes in no time at all. And then another one is Devon Miller. And Devon, you know, it was such a thrill when Devon Miller came to the studio. He was actually the first guest that I had back in the studio, I think, after 8 months. I hadn't had anybody in the studio. So it was really a thrill when Devon came to the studio. I had read one of his books. It's a series that he wrote called Mr. Tickety Talk Clock. And I read this book. Was sent to me actually by Bria Burton, and I was so thrilled that Bria introduced me to Devon, because when he came to the studio and he opened his mouth, he started talking, and he has this beautiful, beautiful voice. And I was just taken with him, because not only is he a talented writer and illustrator, he writes and illustrates his own books. He has 5 books in his Mr. Tickety Talk Clock series. Very clever. I really still can't get over the fact, and this reminds me, all of you out there, you know, think of something you do over and over and think, can you make a book out of it? Because look, Mr. Tickety Talk Clock is so clever. Millions of people have spent millions of hours in classrooms across the country staring at that clock and saying, when is it over? doing the countdown. I used to do the countdown. Sometimes I would start right at the minute I started in the class I wanted to get out of there. And you'd go, you know, 25 minutes, 24 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. And you're looking at that clock all the time and trying to make sure that the teacher doesn't notice that you're looking at that clock all the time. How many of you thought to take that clock and turn it into a character? None of you. I don't know anybody who made a clock into Mr. Tickety-Talk Clock like Devon Miller. I mean, this is so brilliant. I'm thinking maybe I have to do something with my coffee pot. Well, no, I don't make coffee the old way like I used to. Now, if I had a percolator, you know, I'm starting to think live on air. I might do my grandfather's percolator because that was absolutely cool. In the old days, we used to, you know, he would make coffee with the percolator, and I love that. I just love the idea of the water coming up to the top when I was, you know, they had that little glass top, and so you could see the water sort of like little glass handle, and you could see the little bubbles of coming up of hot air, and then it would go seeping down over the coffee and made actually fantastic coffee, wonderful coffee. That percolator coffee was great, and but I just loved it. And so maybe, I don't know, but Devon Miller is so clever that there he is thinking about it and actually turning it into something a major. It's a series, and then I'm sure it's going to go on, and he's going to find many, many things to do with it. I think it would make a wonderful cartoon series. The possibilities for Devon Miller are endless. I believe that one day he's going to be a global best-selling author. The minute, and then, of course, when I heard him talk, I said, this voice, I mean, where did he get this voice? And so it was really an honor that he decided to, you know, accept my invitation to become a correspondent here on Joy on Paper and to do book buzzes that bring us the books that he recommends for children. And I wanted to just mention that a major literary agent in New York City, I said to her, did you look at the books that he chose, that he's chosen since January? He's been choosing one book a month. And she said, oh my goodness, this kid, well, you know, he's 19, 20, now, and he's a kid, of course, to us. And she said, this kid is amazing. He has such a great eye. And I said, yes, he does. She said, well, he could be in publishing. And I said, yeah, you're right. He could be in publishing because he has a great eye, a great talent. And the books that he selects every month have been just absolute winners. So the book that he selected this month, it's really great. It's, you know, I love poetry and I love children's books. So the combination is always so great for me. And the book that he selected this month is written by somebody who is a poet and really a wonderful, wonderful story. So let's play the book buzz that Devon did for Tori the Great, and then I'll talk about it a little bit after, before we go to commercials, okay? No, let's go straight to commercials.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Hitting number one on the Amazon charts for new release in a category of children's fiction on social situations is the book Tori the Great Discovers Her Superpower, written by Tanita Tennant and her four-year-old daughter Tori Tennant. In Tanita's third published book and Tori's first published book, Tori is really excited about getting glasses, but soon realizes that she'll be the only one among her friends with them on. With a little creativity and support from her family, Tori discovers a superpower that will help her face her friends with her new look. Teaching self-confidence and acceptance of differences, this book is all based and inspired around Tanita's daughter, Tori, and her actual story of getting glasses. In real life, Tori actually does call herself Tori the Great, and wears a pretend cape that you'll see illustrated in the story thanks to Carla Bivens. An award-winning poet, Tanita has been writing since she was a little girl, and now her daughter is a writer at a young age as well. Having been a writer at a young age myself, it only shows that you're never too young to start writing. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hollywood Connections introduces an award-winning author. Let me introduce to you
Philip Vega. Hi, this is Philip Vega, award-winning novelist of Last Exit to Montauk, The Captain and the Queen, and Searching for Sarah. You can find my novels at philipvega.com, also thewordverve.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have a very special guest. Whoa, this is a surprise guest, and it's a thrill. It's not every day that I get to talk to an ambassador, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper. Wow, ambassador, that's a nice title, isn't it? Ambassador Thomas Armbruster. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Patsy. And I guess now that I've retired, I've pretty much gone back to Tom. So even Ambassador Armbruster sounds really good.
I think it sounds cool. I'm not dropping that.
Okay.
I think it's cool. Great. Wow.
Thanks.
I've had politicians on here. You know, congressman doesn't impress me so much, but ambassador, I like ambassador. It has a nice ring, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, and it is an honor to represent the United States overseas, and I was very happy to be nominated by President Obama and confirmed by the Senate, and spent about 4 years in the Marshall Islands.
Well, you know, I'm not going to say it. I mean, the Marshall Islands, obviously, you didn't give the campaign $1 billion, so you didn't land up in Paris, but heck, the Marshall Islands, it's still the Marshall Islands.
Yes, and, you know, about 30% of the ambassadors are political. They are the campaign fat cats, you know, the contributors, and about 70% are Foreign Service career types like me. And we do tend to go to the more out-of-the-way places, but I also think that's more challenging.
It is. You actually know something about the place.
Yeah.
Cool.
They teach us languages and... the reason I wrote the book is really to get people interested in the career and to think about it. I think especially after the pandemic, people are kind of reevaluating their career choices and their life, and maybe the State Department, it could be a career that would work for them and their family.
Well, I think, you know, I never thought about it, but, you know, looking back on it, I'd like to have done something like that. So tell us, how did you get involved in the State Department, and how did you get yourself nominated? That's, you know, you moved up there.
Well, it was a little bit serendipity. I happened to meet one of my distant relatives, Gil Calloway, and he turned out to be the public affairs officer or the press secretary at the embassy in Moscow. They invited me to come and be their nanny for their three kids. So I lived with them in Russia for a year as a 17-year-old, and I saw this world of diplomacy and the fact that really they're looking for generalists, you know, people who have curiosity, who want to explore, but you don't necessarily have to be a great linguist or, you know, a high-level negotiator. You really have to be somebody interested in service. And so I took the Foreign Service exam, finally passed it, and then served in Finland, Cuba, Russia, twice, Mexico, Tajikistan, and the Marshall Islands.
Okay, well, I think that's pretty cool. So if I say "huva beva" to you, you know I'm speaking a little Finnish, right?
Huva.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I think what you've done is great. It makes for an interesting life, you know. You have a lot of things here that you've done and been and places you've seen, and it's sort of an eye opener of a book that you can find interest in all sorts of things, and you obviously have enjoyed all of these different assignments.
I really did. I mean, some were a little tougher than others, but especially when our kids were with us in Moscow, that was just the best, because they had very exciting, you know, opportunities. If they had a soccer match, for example, it might be in Belgium, you know. And so I think it was good for the kids and for the family, but there are tough assignments, too. You know, I spent 3 years on the border in Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, and we had a lot of drug violence and things like that. So the reason I wrote the book was really to show people it's not just cocktail parties. You know, it's also working with Americans in crisis or evacuating people if there's an earthquake or something. But to be a little bit of a reality check, but also to get people to go to careers.state.gov and look at taking the test, and then seeing if this might be something that works for them and their family.
Well, I guess when you were a boy in Texas, you never thought of becoming an ambassador.
No, and as I said, I never would have thought of it if Gil Calloway hadn't invited me to live with them in Russia for a year. And that's another reason I thought, you know, people just don't know. They don't see this as an opportunity, but we want the Foreign Service to reflect America. You know, we want it to be diverse and to have people not just from, you know, Yale and Harvard. We want people from Iowa and Alaska and Hawaii. So, I think we're getting there. I think the department is committed to becoming more diverse and to representing America, but we're not there yet.
Well, you know, it's a start. You're starting something. I think, you know, I was fascinated by this idea. It sort of clicked with me, and then I thought to myself, well, and as a matter of fact, you know how these things happen? You have these strings that connect you to people or connect you to things, and just this weekend, I was looking for something to watch, and I watched, did you see there's a new television series called The Ambassadors? The Ambassador?
Oh, no.
Yes,
really?
it's a new series. It's called The Ambassador. It's British. It's a British series. And it's
okay.
About a British ambassador who is sent to Tajikistan, one of those stand places.
Tajikistan, yeah. Dushanbe.
And that's right. And so, exactly. And so this is a new series, and I think they've had the first three episodes, and I was watching this first episode, and so now when that you came on, I thought, well, this is really cool, because, you know, next thing I know, you could write a really great series about being the American ambassador, because the series actually is fun. I was so thrilled after weeks of not finding anything new on the streaming video to watch. I mean, zero to watch. You know, you can watch NCIS repeats only so many times, and then I got this, and it's fresh, you know, and it's funny, but also serious, because exactly what I'm sure happened to you. there were people who were who got in trouble, and the ambassador has to get them out of trouble.
Absolutely, yeah. And I did that in Vladivostok, for example. We had an American pastor, and they trumped up some charges against him because they wanted the land his church was on, and we spent months to get him released, and to see him walk out of that prison and see his family there was just one of the most rewarding moments in my career. It was great.
Wow, that's amazing. And isn't it funny how this? I would just watch that series this weekend, the first time, you know, and it is brand new. It's a brand new series. So, and they had exactly a situation like that where a young man got in trouble for passing out pamphlets or something or the other. And, you know, and the ambassador came to the rescue.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, you get some goodwill with the local government. You know, you work with the foreign minister, and then you've got some political capital you can spend when you need to. You know, when you really need a favor, you can say, well, remember, you know, we helped you guys out, or we brought this jazz band, or your son went to our NBA coach's clinic where we brought an NBA coach over. And then, you know, you can kind of trade favors. So we're trying to help Americans out where we can overseas and American businesses. But sometimes it's Americans in some pretty extreme situations and in prison. That's certainly part of our job.
Well, having traveled and lived abroad for many years, I quickly learned the value of the embassy. And one of the things when I started traveling the world when I was young, my father said, you take a map and you mark the first thing before you go anywhere, you mark the American embassy and always know how to get there. And I did that, and it really actually saved my life twice, once in Ankara. If I hadn't known where to run to get to the embassy, I really might have gotten caught up in a horrible riot they had there at the time.
Wow.
So yes, it's an important job, and I think it's just so cool that somebody who, you know, as you say, it's a career, and this is a nice reward, because the plum ones, you know, you always people hear about the ones going to Paris and London, but the ones, the sort of the nitty gritty ones, the ones who do the work, are all of you guys and gals out there who do all the other countries and really get to know these countries and make these connections that help Americans.
Yeah, and your dad's advice was really good. These days, you can register it at the embassies, too, online. So if there is some sort of disaster or civil unrest, the embassy knows how to get hold of you. And I think that's a great bit of advice to know where it is and also to put your name on that list to be registered. But we do have this concept of fair share, so that if you did serve in Rome for 3 years, you know, you're going to go to a tougher place after that. And for me, that's like the briar patch. I'm happy to go to the Vladivostok and to Tajikistan's of the world, because I really enjoy seeing places that, you know, you're not going to see otherwise.
Well, so tell us, since you were in the Marshall Islands for so long, tell us a little bit about them, because nobody knows anything about them.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an interesting country. There's a United flight that goes across the Pacific called the Island Hopper. So most people stop in Hawaii, the first stop. But if you go beyond that, the next stop is the Marshall Islands. And I think the first thing to know is that that was the scene of 67 nuclear tests by the United States. So one of the things that I was dealing with as ambassador is, how do we manage this legacy? Because, you know, they're still living with the effects of that. They've got the island of Bikini that is not habitable. And I think the U.S. kind of owes the Marshall Islands a debt for what they did for our national security during the Cold War. So I was very committed to doing what I could to make sure the relationship was positive and that we did things that were good for the Marshall Islands. And one of the things was actually trying to help them out, one, during a drought. They had a severe drought, and we got emergency aid through President Obama. And the other thing was to try to draw attention to sea level rise there, because it's an atoll Pacific island, you know, 10 feet above sea level. And if the seas rise, they go under. And so I nominated one of their poets to be the United Nations speaker at the climate summit in New York. And she went and just knocked out the UN delegates. She did a beautiful job. Her name's Kathy Jetnell Kitchener, and her poem, which is to her infant, called "Dear Matafele," just was a really great way to show what climate change means to a mom, you know, to an individual person in the Pacific Islands. So even though it's a small country, I felt like we were still doing some important things.
Well, I think the book is it's just great. I love books like this, books that tell us something that we don't know anything about, and books that open our eyes to things that we should know something about. So I'm just really so thrilled that you were able to join me today on Joy on Paper. What I'm going to do, I'm going to put this up on my webpage. I will put a promo up for your book, but I would also, now that you mentioned this poem, because I love poetry, I will look it up. And I will put that on the website, too. Okay?
Thanks, Patsy.
And I will send you a link, and I hope that I can help promote your book. And I will talk to people, too. You know, it's a great career. We need people to represent America in a good way, a positive way. We have so many things to offer the world. And I know that, as I said, from my point of view, when I traveled, it was always the American embassy, or if I was in a smaller town, the American consulate that I went to for help, and they were always there and always ready to help me. And I did get myself, my dad said, when I started traveling, I was very young, and he said two things. He said, "You are not going to travel in blue jeans." He said, "You are not going to look like a hippie." And he said, you wear a little suit. He said, "You always have to look good, and you have always marked the American embassy." And he was right. You know, because I always had either a little navy blue suit or a little black suit with a white blouse, I was invited to talk to people, meet people, you know, get involved with people that would never have talked to an American kid wearing blue jeans. So my dad was very smart, you know.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And, I think it's fantastic. Ambassador, I would call you ambassador. If I was your neighbor, I would call you ambassador. I'd continue calling you ambassador forever, because I think it's a wonderful title, and you earned it, and you have to be very proud of yourself. And I'll send you a link to this interview and also my promo for your book, okay?
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me. And the name is Thomas Armbruster, and it's How to Become an Ambassador, an American Foreign Service Odyssey. And I really appreciate that you came on today. And I think it's a cool book. Okay?
My pleasure. Take care.
Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
What a book. This is fun. Isn't it fun to learn something new all the time? My goodness. I just talked to an ambassador. Okay. I've been trying to get Henry Kissinger on. I understand he's still very, very lucid. I know he's old. He's in his 90s. But my grandfather was 99 years old when he passed away. And that guy was smarter and knew more things than anybody I knew. So I'm trying for Henry Kissinger. Anybody out there who has a link to Henry Kissinger, I need to talk to that man. I've got some things to say to him. Anyway, I'm just waiting now. I don't know if she's on yet. I'm waiting for a call in for where's this book? I have this book. I get so many books. Okay, it's called Creative Care, A Revolutionary Approach to Dementia and Elder Care by Anne Basting? I don't know if it's Basting or Basting. And is she on? Okay, here we are. Hi. Anne, are you there?
Hello. I am here, and it's Basting Like a Turkey.
Okay, Basting. I like that one, Basting Like a Turkey. I don't know. My throat is rough today because we've been spraying everything with Clorox all over the place all the time. But anyway, it's good to have you on the program. So it's Anne Basting, PhD. Isn't that nice? And the name of the book is Creative Care, A Revolutionary Approach to Dementia and Elder Care. And, you know, there's so many things I like about this book. And I wanted to particularly tell people that, of course, the wonderful thing this is a book that we really need nowadays. Everybody is dealing with somebody in their family or somebody they know who is suffering from dementia or has problems with memory. And so it's a very relevant book. And of course, I think that you've done a beautiful job here. Do you want to explain your approach to dealing with this subject? And I want to mention that you won the MacArthur Genius. What was it? Genius something. No, I can't remember.
Yeah. It's a fellowship. MacArthur Foundation. Yeah.
Yes. So I mean, so you that's pretty impressive. Tell us about your approach to dealing with this subject.
You know, I come from a background in the arts, and I basically have spent about 25 years trying to bring the tools of meaningful expression into the hands of caregivers, whether they're family caregivers or volunteers or professionals in long-term care settings. The tools and the process described in creative care invite a person into meaningful expression and for them to build on the strengths that they have left rather than focusing on all of the losses like memory and sometimes figuring out the chronological control of language. If we loosen the framework into a more poetic framework, people can participate and express themselves and connect to each other again, which is exactly what this disease cuts off.
Well, for me, my boys were both musicians when they were young, and they played a lot of concerts. Duets, they violin and piano. And one of the things that we did when they were young, we visited many, many seniors' homes and facilities, and they played music. They were classical, playing classical music mostly. But I want to tell you this little story. One time, it was so beautiful. My one son was 5, and the other was about 9. They were playing at a home where people had dementia and Alzheimer's, and they played Chopin, they played Mozart, and then at the end, my boys always played some music that that was from World War II, and so they started playing "Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree," and they love that song and because it was one of my father's favorites. And so they're playing Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree. And suddenly, from the side of the room, a woman stood up and she came over to my son who was playing the piano. And he was playing the song and she stood next to him. And then she said to him, "Will you dance with me?" And he stopped playing the piano. My other son continued playing the violin, and my son, at the age of 9, danced with this woman to that song. And later on, they told me after the program that she hadn't talked to anyone for years. She hadn't done anything for years. But that song, and my son was so composed. I mean, that he kept humming the song because his brother was little and was really needed the piano accompaniment, I'll tell you the truth. And my older son just danced with her and kept humming the song. And it was the first time. And so the power of music, the power is incredible.
It is. It's the power of music. It's also the power of saying yes and that your son did, which is responding positively to what's in the moment to invite someone deeper into the moment, into a shared experience. And that's one of the chapters in the book is all about how to use yes and or improvisation to go with the person where they are, and to use that technique in order to connect with each other. And that's exactly what he did. He went in. He could have said no.
I thought he might just brush her off or something. I mean, you know, even me, I mean, although I knew him, it never occurred to me. It really, I was crying. I still cry when I think about it. How he just very smoothly just took her hand. She said, dance with me. I mean, it was the first thing she had said in years, they said. And he stood up and he started dancing. And luckily, of course, having come from a family where Lawrence Welk was was every Saturday night, he had seen me dance with my dad and my husband, and so he was, you know, comfortable in that, and he just started dancing around with her a little bit, you know, and never losing beat. He never lost the beat, and that he just wasn't dismissive. It showed, you know, it was so beautiful.
You know, it's funny, people ask me, they say, oh, isn't it depressing working with people with dementia? And I imagine, you know, you have this story. I have 25 years of those stories of seeing just how impactful it can be to open a moment to a person who's had expression and connection cut off through stigma or isolation or people not knowing what to do or say to them. And these simple ways that you can join them using imagination and creativity, like dance, like music, like, you know, poems or words or song, shifting to inviting the person to co-create something with you, right? To write a new story with you. There are just hundreds of stories that show the power of those moments. For me, as I've witnessed them, but also for family members and for whole care systems that have infused this approach into the way that they offer care.
Well, I think it's a wonderful book, and I love that as part of the title you have The Power of Connecting Through Imagination, Joy, and Wonder. So you are on the right program. You're on Joy on Paper, and you use that word. So that was just perfect. I saw that. I thought, oh, that's perfect. And it's called Creative Care, A Revolutionary Approach to Dementia and Elder Care. And I particularly wanted to mention your chapter on awe. I thought that was a fantastic chapter.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, we don't think about that as a way that we experience a connection to the larger world, a touch of vastness, and sort of puts us into perspective and time and place in the universe, and invites us into wonder. If you think about things that fill you with that feeling, invite a person with dementia into those experiences. And that's really, to me, the bulk of this work. And what you described in that moment with your son, that fills you with awe, and me, as you know, and your listeners, as you tell the story. These can be moments of awe in themselves.
Well, you've done a beautiful job with this book, telling very heartwarming stories and very insightful stories that I think will help open people's eyes and make them start to think. Now, you mentioned here about some of the things that people can do, like the cards and stuff. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
Sure. I send them to timeslips.org, which is a nonprofit that I founded and have been working with for about 10 years now. They really are designed as a resource to bring these techniques to people, family caregivers, students and volunteers, and then organizations, like I said, trying to use the creative care approach. And you'll find there, too, a link to the Creative Care Imagination Kit, which just came out, and is really a tangible version of this that is pretty intuitive to use. 15 beautiful question cards, 15 image prompts for stories, and then a really elegantly designed journal with instructions and little words of inspiration.
Well, that it is beautiful. I think it's people really. You should check this out. It's called timeslips.org. Go to timeslips.org and order this Creative Care Imagination Kit. And I know you get 15 cards plus other information on how to put this method that Anne Basting has come out with into practice to make sure that you connect with those that you love and that they stay connected to you. Anne, I think you've done just a beautiful job with this book, and I really want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And the book is Creative Care, A Revolutionary Approach to Dementia and Elder Care. And I know that you've been on PBS many times, right? And other programs. And I know that Psychology Today has written a very nice blurb about the book because you've done a terrific job.
Thanks so much. And clearly you feel this work in your bones.
I do, because we had this experience and continued on for many years of doing these kind of events. They went on to become scientists and stuff, so with not so many concerts now. But
wow.
But our entire childhood was spent doing this, and of course I have always been involved in our local hospital here with the same type of thing. So thank you so much, Anne, for being on Joy on Paper today, and I'm glad that you use the word joy and wonder in your book title, because that's what this program is about. Anne Basting, well, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Wow. Okay. I have time for one Jim Lamb poem. I think I have time, and I want to hear something from Jim Lamb, because I love Jim Lamb. If we have one. No? Oh, that's all right. Okay. We can do one. Yes, I think we can do one. No? Oh, we can't. We don't have time. Okay. I didn't expect the ambassador to call. Isn't that nice? That was very nice of him to call in when he discovered that my other guest wasn't going to be on today. So I want to really, really thank the ambassador for calling in. Don't you love that name? Be an ambassador. Wow, that's pretty cool. Okay. Well, it's been a great day. It turned out to be a great day, even though my main guest canceled on me. Oh, well, these things happen. Anyway, remember, people, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very lucky, to hear them, those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture. And I'm telling you, Phil Vega's book, Last Exit to Montauk, will become a film. And because Don Reese and I have been promoting his book, we will be on the red carpet when that happens. So Phil Vega, have fun at Gasparilla. Don Reese, have fun at Gasparilla. And I will be listening to your program today at 2 o'clock because I know it's going to be great. It always is. And I believe you have a guest today, Rick Castell, who was on Joy on Paper several years ago. So Don, have a wonderful program. And everyone, have a wonderful, wonderful day. And get those tickets to Gasparilla. It should be fun over there. I'm glad that they put it on this film festival. We need more film festivals because we need, for Joy on Paper, we need more of my authors to get film deals. Okay, bye-bye now, everyone. Say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And, oh, I wish I was a general. I would have been a great general. I'd have been a great ambassador. I'd love to be an ambassador. Wouldn't that have been nice? Bye-bye now.